power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
It's hot. Fire!
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Good morning and welcome.
Dan Mickley.
Oh my God, he's from Chicago. That's amazing.
Vince Marotta.
Oh my, who's better than Vince?
Sarah Cazell. And Jerry Carlin.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Mickley and Marotta mornings.
Shout out to Dan Mickley, my boy. Him and Vince. Okay.
Good morning! Happy Monday, Valley sports fans, and off we go into another memorable week of sporting content, a week that will include games 2, 3. Yeah, 2 and 3. Won't be game 4.
Hey, don't get excited.
Kind of 4.
Kind of 4.
Yeah. I'm still against this whole notion that the week begins on Sunday.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Stupid.
It is kind of stupid, isn't it? Sunday should be the end of the week. I totally agree with you on that. Totally agree with
we
you on that.
We could change that.
It's going to include the NFL draft. It begins with Passover for all our Jewish brethren and sisters, right?
That's right. Tonight, the first Seder.
Yep, that's right. But Passover, it's not your favorite of the Jewish holidays, right?
How could it be anyone's favorite? It's the single worst holiday in any religion.
You don't like eating bitter root and...
I don't mind the actual Seder if that's all it was, but for those who keep the don't eat unleavened bread for 8 days... There's nothing I love more than leavened bread. I'm a big fan of leavened bread.
Leavened bread.
I mean, everything I eat, pizza, pasta, burritos, sandwiches, my entire diet is leavened.
Come on, it's only 8 days, Jarrett. You can do this.
Yeah. Well, come on. It's supposed to symbolize all the bitterness of slavery and dirt in Egypt.
I know.
There's a reason for it. There's a reason why this isn't a big chicken shawarma wrap for you sitting on your plate.
And as we know, not eating bread for 8 days is exactly the same as hundreds of years of slavery.
Carrying straw and mud on your back. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. All right. Oh, that's good. Good. Good start to the week. Start the show, Jared.
Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
The Arizona Diamondbacks salvaged a split in their four-game series in San Francisco. They beat the Giants 5-3 on Sunday. Gabby Moreno's two-run single in the sixth inning gave the D-backs a 3-2 lead. They'd pad that lead with two more runs in the ninth. Slade Ciccone just called up from AAA Reno to start for Merrill Kelly, who was a late scratch with shoulder discomfort.
Great.
Ciccone was magnificent. He allowed just two hits and two runs over six innings. He got through 18 outs in just 64 pitches before yielding to the bullpen. Kevin Ginkle did give up a run in the ninth, but notched his fourth save as the D-backs moved their record to 11-12 on the year. They are in St. Louis for the next three, starting tonight. Brandon Fott on the mound against Lance Lynn. Remember Lance Lynn?
Oh, I do remember him.
Oh, Diamondbacks, they enjoyed Lance Lynn last year. Four home runs in the third inning of Game 3 of the NLDS when he was with the Dodgers. He's going for the Cardinals. First pitch, 4:45. Pregame coverage starts at 4 on Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
And everybody in the Valley, collectively, hold your fingers crossed about Merrill Kelly.
Yeah.
Not exactly the news you, you needed.
It's
ridiculous.
It's ridiculous at this point. Well, I mean, last week we were talking about, imagine Montgomery
joining this rotation.
Yes. Getting him all in order.
Right? Eduardo Rodriguez, good. It looks like, according to Derek Hall, he's going to be back within that 60-day window.
Yes.
Good. So no one's talking about shutting him down the entire year. Good. And then Merrill Kelly rolls in with a sore shoulder.
We literally just lived through this joke with the Suns.
We did.
The first half of the entire season was, as soon as one guy came back, one guy got hurt.
But to their credit, instead of going out like sleepwalking yesterday, they put together a really nice effort and won a game.
Ciccone was great.
Yeah.
Not the only injury, Merrill Kelly. Blaze Alexander left yesterday's game with hamstring cramps.
Oh, boy. But you also, if you're the Giants and you're rolling in, like, there are probably a lot of Giants players who didn't go out Saturday night because they knew they were facing Merrill Kelly on Sunday. And then they wake up, they get to the park. Oh, we're not facing him. There's no doubt that your guard goes down a little bit.
Yeah.
Whatever. I got some thoughts on this.
But you know, like, when a Merrill Kelly goes out, that allows the rest of the Diamondbacks to play freer. Have we learned nothing this year, Vic? Suns in Minneapolis preparing for game two of their first round series against the Timberwolves and likely trying to figure a lot of stuff out after dropping game one, 120-95 on Saturday. Grayson Allen left that game in the third quarter. Head coach Frank Vogel said x-rays were negative. Allen has a sprain. We'll see about his availability for tomorrow's game, which gets cracking at 4:30 from the Target Center. We'll have a lot on Suns.
Oh, yeah. Today. Yeah, we're going to swarm that game. Not exactly what you wanted in a lot of different ways.
Swarm that game like the T-Wolves swarmed Devin Booker.
Not exactly what you wanted. Boy. Yeah, I would say so.
Oh, boy.
It was the perfect ending, wasn't it, Jarrett? Yesterday in the NBA playoffs. That was a callback to last week.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much a day of duds. Pretty much. Boston crushed Miami in game one, 114-94. They led by as many as 34 in that game. Jason Tatum led the Celtics with 23 points, added 10 boards, 10 assists for his first postseason triple-double. Boston hit 22 three-pointers on the day. Milwaukee cruised past Indiana, 109-94, to grab a 1-0 series lead. Damian Lillard had all 35 of his points in the first half of that game. Chris Middleton added 23 for the Bucks. Clippers jumped all over Dallas and hung on for a 109-97 win in L.A. James Harden, 28 points, 8 assists. Ivica Zubac, 20 points, 15 boards for the Clips. The best game of the weekend came in the last game of the weekend. Oklahoma City survived a game one scare from New Orleans. They win 94-92. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander had a three-point play with 32 seconds left to put the Thunder up three. C.J. McCollum answered with a bucket 6 seconds later to pull the Pelicans within one. After a Chet Holmgren free throw, McCollum missed a 30-footer at the buzzer, but not by much. The Thunder hang on for the win. Tonight in the NBA, three game twos on tap, starting with Cleveland hosting Orlando at 4 o'clock. That's on NBA TV. Cavs lead that series 1-0. The Knicks gunning for a 2-0 series lead over Philly tonight at Madison Square Garden. That game gets going at 4:30 on TNT. And then it's Nuggets-Lakers, game two. Denver trying to hold home court advantage in that game that starts at 7 o'clock from Ball Arena, also on TNT. Got to give a shout out to the Knicks-Sixers game on Saturday. Was very good.
Oh,
those
yeah.
Those two teams were playing really hard.
Yes. Well, everybody but Tobias Harris.
All that. Yeah.
Everybody but him.
You just got a thumbs up from a lot of Philly fans by saying that.
Yeah.
The league announced the finalists for the 2023-24 awards in the NBA. Nikola Jokic of Denver, Dallas's Luka Doncic, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of Oklahoma City. Three finalists for MVP. For the Rookie of the Year, it's Victor Wembanyama of the Spurs. Just give him the award now. Chet Holmgren of OKC and Brandon Miller of Charlotte. And for Coach of the Year, OKC's Mark Daigneault. Minnesota's Chris Finch and Jamal Mosley of Orlando.
It almost feels like it's Luka's turn to win this award.
No, no chance.
No?
No.
Okay, good.
Distant third.
Okay, good. Good. I got the wrong. I was listening to somebody talk yesterday, a national basketball dude, and he talked about how Luka was his pick, and I thought, I've heard this before. I wonder if this is a thing.
You think?
All right, I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that.
I think it's
Jokic's third year in a row?
He didn't win it last year. No. Embiid won it last year. Three out of 4 years.
I made that mistake too, Jared.
I know. I forgot Embiid.
No,
won
listen.
Last year.
It's you forget that. Yeah.
Because they won the championship. It's because Denver won the championship in the year he didn't win.
Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Play was halted yesterday in the final round of the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. But it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. Actually, no. Is it getting close now?
It is. Scotty Scheffler.
Scotty Scheffler atop the leaderboard. Going into today, four strokes better than Sahith Theegala. Scheffler has, three holes to complete today? Did I get bad info? I think I got bad info.
Yeah, I think you did.
I think it's done.
No, it's
no, no, no. It just got started. They got rained out yesterday. They got weathered out yesterday.
Ooh, anyway,
ESPN says final.
I thought it was a foregone conclusion. It's not. In history on the LPGA Tour, Nelly Korda won the Chevron Championship in the Woodlands, Texas. Her fifth straight tour victory.
Mm.
Third player ever to do that, joining a couple of heavy hitters on the LPGA's history. Nancy Lopez and Annika Sorenstam.
So this is cool because this is like female sports' next dominant athlete. From yes. Caitlin Clark to Nelly Korda. Now, her dad was, as you and I know, is a famous tennis player back in the day.
I did not know that until a few weeks
really?
Ago.
Really?
Yes. Peter Korda.
Yes.
Peter without the second E.
Yeah.
Petra Korda. Petra.
Yeah. Yeah, and then her older sister Jessica was good for a while, but Nelly's on a different level.
It's all about Nelly. There you go. There's your splash for Monday, April 22nd. Coming up next, we will dive into Saturday's performance by the Phoenix Suns, if you want to call it that. Bickley and Murata mornings here on this Monday, live from the Akshin Community Studios on Arizona Sports, the local sports.
Hey, it's Luke. After getting run off the floor by Minnesota in Game 1, how can the Suns match the T-Wolves' desperation and even the series in Game 2? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Can you believe Mike Conley was 0 for 10 before he hit that shot? That's his first field goal. Now Durant gets it poked away and stolen by Edwards. They go to the length of the floor, jam it, and let out a yell along with the rest of the Timberwolves crowd here at Target Center as the T-Wolves go back up 20.
Yeah, it's our first go at it together, you know. So, you know, I believe in the guys and the experience level of the guys that we have in our group and what we've done collectively, not collectively, individually, in our playoff experiences. But, you know, we've got to go through it together. You know what I mean? It's not always going to be smooth, but adversity is good for us.
Frank Vogel, head coach of the Suns on Saturday. John Bloom and one of the highlights from Anthony Edwards. He had plenty of them in the second half of that game. Timberwolves take Game 1 of this best of 7, 120-95. There's different ways to look at this game if you're looking at it from the Suns' perspective. You can look at it and say, it's one game, big deal. You can look at it and say, oh that was troubling. Mm-hmm. You can be somewhere in the middle.
You can say all that stuff.
I love the way you framed it because we talked so much last week, Bick, about one of the big advantages the Suns had going into this series was the psychological advantage because they had just absolutely beaten the stuffing out of the Timberwolves three times this year.
Right.
So for them to reverse it in game one with the stakes being what they are in the postseason, you are absolutely correct. That psychological advantage is a thing of the past.
Yeah, that's really the only thing of significance at the moment that the Phoenix Suns lost on Saturday. It's one game, you win Tuesday, and then the whole narrative changes for the better, and you're coming back home in a great position. But that was the casualty, and it's a shame because that first quarter, I really loved the way the Suns really seemed to absorb the physicality of the game, and then they stopped liking it so much.
Yeah.
And that to me is the big scary part about this series. And it's not just the size advantage of the Timberwolves, which obviously came to bear in game one. If you look at the points in the paint and the rebounding numbers, but it was also that it was the level of physicality and how the teams reacted to that from the second quarter on. It was all the Timberwolves. So, and when Anthony Edwards, and you were right about this, at the Anthony Edwards, what happens if, well, that's exactly what happened on Saturday. He went off in the third quarter, and that was sort of the end of it all.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly trending in that direction, and Edwards just kind of helped push it along. That's the way kind of I viewed it.
Mm-hmm.
Look, even with the disastrous second quarter, and the Suns lost the second quarter and third quarter by double digits, by 11 in the second, by 10 in the third. Still, Bradley Beal hits a jump shot with 7:03 to go in the third, cuts it to 4. Minnesota calls a timeout. The Suns go the rest of the third quarter without scoring a basket with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
I mean, give credit to Minnesota's defense. One of my big takeaways was, okay, we heard all this talk again, and if you only watch the Timberwolves play against the Suns this year, and then you hear, oh, they're a great defensive team. Well, we didn't see it for three games.
No.
We saw it in game one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They were intense. They were physical. They were relentless. But 7 minutes? Over 7 minutes without a basket?
Plus,
The Suns fell into all their worst habits, though. A lot of one-on-one play, bench players not contributing, sloppy turnovers at times. Like, all the worst things we saw throughout the year in different stretches in that game we saw.
Yeah, but I think what Vinny's saying is also accurate, and that was the fact that Devin Booker got locked up for the back end of that game, the back three quarters of that game, by Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels. Right, exactly. Now, these are good defenders, these are good athletes, but this is Devin freaking Booker.
Yes. He's gone against good defenders his entire career.
Exactly. You've got to get up and over these matchups.
They got the advantage. Devin Booker, after the tough game, says, "Hey, it's just it's a one game."
Is he chilling? Vinny?
As far as the series, I have been in a few of these. It's an emotional roller coaster for a lot of people. I think the team that can stay solid, not get too high, not get too low, and just stick to the task. But
Frank Vogel talked about the balance. You know, how do you balance the big three being so good at iso ball, but also you're going away from your tried and true system of ball movement that really works?
Well, that's the key word. It's a balance. You know what I mean? You want to involve their weaker defenders, not their better defenders, but you also got to keep your guys in rhythm. You know what I mean? So, you know, the bigger thing is to get your movement and get your key guys open.
Yeah. So we'll see about that. The Suns did not move the ball. They had 16 assists, which is about halfway to their magic number.
Yes.
It's not acceptable.
It's a great observation. There was, as much as it was comforting to see Kevin Durant get the ball and break down a defender, mostly Karl Anthony Towns, and make a bunch of shots in the first half, particularly the first quarter, you're absolutely right. When the offense becomes, give it to one guy and let that guy play one-on-one until he breaks down the defender, then look for a pass, that ain't it. I mean, sometimes it is, but that's not the way to run an offense. And if it becomes too much of that, everything seems to break apart.
It could be like that for possessions, but that can't be the strategy for entire stretches.
To me, it's gotta come off of more ball movement. It has to come off more ball movement. And you're right, the assist figures are the first kind of window into that.
Yeah, so, you look at the Suns' assist total in any game, and you can, without looking at another statistic, you can probably determine what the result of that game
is. What kind of game they played, exactly.
To be fair, when your two best role-playing shooters don't make any shots the entire game, it's hard to get assists.
Well, that's the thing, is the Suns really had one player show up for game one.
That's it.
And that was Kevin Durant, who still had his struggles with turnovers. In fact, there was a stretch where on back-to-back possessions, Grayson Allen and Kevin Durant threw two of the worst passes in the history of the Phoenix Suns organization.
Yeah, back-to-back.
Yeah, and it led to like 5 points for Minnesota.
They just fed that avalanche part of the game.
But Durant was very good offensively. Bradley Beal kind of reverted back to the Bradley Beal before the It's Time Bradley Beal. Mm-hmm. He was good. He was efficient. 6 out of 10 shooting, right. 6 assists, 1 turnover.
But he wasn't superstar Bradley Beal.
But he wasn't as aggressive. No. Devin Booker really struggled.
Mm-hmm.
Grayson Allen, who was that guy in his uniform?
I don't know. And then when he got injured, Eric Gordon was even worse. Eric Gordon, did you see this stat? He's 11 of 51 from three-point territory in his last 11 games. 22%.
He's missed his last 9 overall.
Ugh. Can't have that.
He's kind of, he's been one of those guys, and I did a little research on this too. It seems like Eric Gordon has had a ton of games where, you know, playing, coming off the bench, I used 15 minutes as the benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who play 15 minutes of basketball and don't score, that was his fifth time he's done that this year. Which is not near the league leaders, by the way.
Wow.
It happens too much. But that's kind of, that's life with Eric Gordon.
I know.
Frank Vogel said he could come back and hit 5 out of 5. But they need him to.
Yeah, but he's supposed to be more consistent than that.
He's not supposed to be Jay Crowder.
No,
he's supposed to be a little better.
He's supposed to be microwave offense, is what he is. Yeah. He's supposed to be better.
Well,
yes.
To Jared's point, they can't have the Jay Crowder type stat line from Eric Gordon because they're already going to get that from Royce O'Neal.
Exactly. That's well said. And the way Royce O'Neal started on Saturday, I thought, oh, okay, wow, yeah, he's feeling it.
He played pretty well.
Not bad.
But there wasn't a whole lot to talk about in terms of positive.
I thought Yusuf Nurkic was good early, but then as the game went on, again, the rebounding advantage just piled up and piled up and piled up.
Well, the Suns, I mean, the other thing we haven't talked about, which really got to them early, they could have had a double-digit lead if not for all the missed layups. They were 11 for 25 at the rim.
They missed a lot of little, you're right. You wouldn't call them gimmies, but they were right around the rim.
No, there were some tough ones, but they're right. We're right there. Embrace the Suns playoffs and go all in with Arizona Sports. Tune in daily, 8 a.m., 12 p.m., and 3 p.m. to snag our exclusive Phoenix Suns code word. Then text that code word to 620-620 for your shot at scoring Suns playoff tickets. Don't miss your chance. Tune in today, 8 o'clock hour, noon hour, 3 o'clock hour. Coming up next, D-backs get a win in San Francisco before heading out to St. Louis. We'll relive it in D-backs Daily. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
The home of Arizona Diamondbacks baseball.
D-backs Daily.
D-backs closing out their weekend at Oracle Park in San Francisco, trying to salvage a split, and bad news before the game. Merrill Kelly scratched from his start after experiencing shoulder discomfort on Saturday, so Torrey Lovello handed the ball to right-hander Slade Ciccone, who was just called up from AAA Reno. He'd be facing fireballer Jordan Hicks. The D-backs would get on the board first. Top of the second, Jock Peterson got hit by a pitch to lead things off. Then Eugenio Suarez got plunked. Pavin Smith hit into a fielder's choice where Hicks opted to go to the third to get the lead runner in Peterson instead of going to second to start an almost certain double play. Runners at first and second with one out. Gabby Moreno drew a walk to load the bases, and that would bring up Jake McCarthy.
Here comes the 0-2. Swung on. That is hit well out to left field. Going back on it is Conforto. He will make the catch. Suarez will tag from third. And the Diamondbacks take the early 1-0 lead on the McCarthy sack fly.
Yeah, Chris Garagiola on the call. 1-0 without the aid of a base hit. Blaze Alexander grounded out to first to end the inning. Ciccone, meanwhile, was cruising. He got through three innings without allowing a base runner on a total of 23 pitches. He allowed his first base runner in the fourth when he hit Jung-Hoo Lee with a pitch, but he stayed right there as the young right-hander got Lamont Wade Jr., Wilmer Flores, and Michael Conforto in succession. Giants would strike in the fifth with two outs. Tyro Estrada reached on an infield single to third base, and that brought up Mike Yastrzemski. Yes!
Yes!
3-1 pitch. Swung on and belted. Out to right field. It's hit pretty well. And this ball is gone. Just got out for his first of the year, but the Giants take a 2-1 lead.
Not only his first home run of the year, his first extra base hit of the year. And talk about barely cleared. That would have been a home run in 6 of 30 ballparks.
Oh!
But it still counts. 2-1 lead there. D-backs would bounce right back in the top of the sixth. Peterson doubled a lead off against reliever Eric Miller. Suarez would then reach on an error by Nick Ahmed at short. Christian Walker then pitch hit for Pavin Smith and flight out to center. But that moved Peterson and Suarez up 90 feet each. Moreno was the next hitter, and he would give the D-backs the lead right back.
2-2. Swung on and shot up the middle, a base hit. Peterson scores. Suarez rounding third as the throw to the plate is not in time. A two-run single by Moreno. And the Diamondbacks back in front, 3-2.
And Miller would wiggle out of the jam with a strike-him-out, throw-him-out double play. Fanned McCarthy while Moreno was hosed down by San Francisco catcher Patrick Bailey. Ciccone had a stress-free sixth. He got Lee, Wade, and Flores in order on 11 pitches, and that would end his day. Bryce Jarvis came in for the seventh. He got out of a bases-loaded two-out jam by getting Jorge Soler to ground out to third. Ryan Thompson would come in and work a scoreless eighth, but he got a lot of help from his defense in doing so.
Speaking of fireworks, Moreno flashing the arm and throwing out Lee, trying to steal second. Now the pitch. Breaking ball lined out to left field. Gurriel makes a sliding catch. Oh, the inning comes to an end. And a base hit taken away by Lourdes.
Haven't been able to highlight the defense very much
listen,
this year.
In watching that game, I thought Gabriel Moreno nailing Jung-Hoo Lee at second base was enormous in that game.
It was
just sort of one of these statements that not today. It just felt gigantic. First of all, it was like, why are you trying to run on him?
Yeah. You could say that about both teams with those catchers behind the plate. Yeah. Patrick Bailey's ridiculous.
Right, no, you're right. You're right. But that at that point in time, that was a giant play. Yeah. So, but you're right. It was good to see that defense being an impact player to victory.
So the ninth we go. D-backs were able to dial up some insurance against reliever Nick Avila. Moreno singled. McCarthy grounded into a fielder's choice. But Tyler Fitzpatrick made an error at short. Runners on the corners. Nobody out for
Hello, Newman.
Here comes the 1-2. Breaking ball. Line down the left field line. That's a fair ball. Moreno scores. McCarthy bursting towards third. Newman takes second. It's an RBI double. And it's now 4-2.
Tell Marte would add a sack fly to score McCarthy. D-backs would hand a three-run lead to the Ginkle. Ginkle allowed a one-out double to Matt Chapman. Then Bailey grounded out. That brought up Tyro Estrada.
The tying run is on deck, and the pitch is lined into left field. That is going to be down, and it gets past Gurriel and goes all the way to the left field wall. Chapman scores. Estrada holds it second. It's an RBI double, and it's now 5-3.
There's the defense we're used to.
Yeah, right.
Lead down to two, tying run at the plate, and yes! And Ginkle said, you know what? It's time to go home, everybody.
Right-hander ready. He comes set. Ginkle, he deals. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. And the ball game is over. Diamondbacks win it by a final score of 5-3. They split the series with the Giants. And they will head to St. Louis with a victory in hand.
It feels unbelievable. This team is beat up, tired, dealing with some unforeseen circumstances, and they go out and win a huge game. And it just speaks volumes about this team's toughness, their ability to focus at the most critical times, and then close it out and win a game. It wasn't easy. Today was not an easy day. You know, you wake up and get the news on Merrill. I don't care what happens. It takes its toll on the team. And then what Slade did just kind of gave everybody a chance to catch their breath, and we went out and won a big game.
And a weekend where the D-backs get a split on Friday night, they explode for 17 runs, 22 hits, and absolutely pace the Giants. Mm-hmm. The biggest takeaway, the biggest story from the weekend is what Torrey Lovello was just talking about. Merrill Kelly scratched from his start. And I know Jared has done this earlier in the season, is you try to read between the lines based on what word is used to describe the feeling that the injured player is having.
Mm-hmm.
This is discomfort. There's discomfort, there's soreness.
There's tightness,
which mm-hmm. might be the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are, again, sitting on pins and needles, as you said earlier.
The shoulder area, which is near the rotator cuff. Pins and needles. Here's a couple of thoughts about this. Number one, out of all the pitchers on the Diamondbacks, this is the guy I worry about because Merrill Kelly is the spin rate guy. He's the guy that spins the ball at crazy, crazy numbers.
Which a lot of people will point to as the main culprit for all these injuries.
Yes.
He's also no youngster.
And he's no youngster.
Compared to some of the other pitchers.
And he's also one of the best pitchers in the National League at the moment. So that's how big the loss could and might be. So please no, not this guy. Not this guy. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed about that. Number two, reading some of the dynamics of yesterday. So this went down Saturday night. Slade Ciccone was given the heads up that, hey, you might be going to the show, man. You might be pitching. Okay. So all the Diamondbacks roll into the stadium Sunday morning, and they see Slade Ciccone's nameplate over a locker, and they're all thinking, uh-oh, which one of us is getting sent out of here? They didn't even know that Merrill Kelly had been scratched from the start. So for the team to respond the way they did, I think you take a lot of solace in that. I can't help but wonder if the Giants didn't let up a little bit knowing that they didn't have to deal with Merrill Kelly. But either way, I think the end result was, had they lost that game, the doom and gloom around this baseball team this morning, I wouldn't even want to have to deal with that.
No.
Right?
You put a Band-Aid on the situation by winning that
game.
That's
what you do.
And again, like Torrey Lovello said, you give credit because that was a day filled with adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And now you move on to St. Louis, a team that you beat 2 out of 3 the last time you saw them. So maybe they can keep it rolling. But man, you just got to crush.
No.
They cannot withstand another injury that's going to keep Merrill Kelly out for any sustained amount of time. And we went, you know, Jordan Montgomery, that was another story of the weekend. He was brilliant in his debut. He went 6 innings in his debut. But you're resolved to the fact, hey, the Diamondbacks 1-4 starting pitching-wise, a lot of teams can't touch that. And we've never seen more than two of them in the rotation at the same time.
It's the Suns related.
It's
very, very frustrating. When the Diamondbacks began this line of thinking that, hey, if we can just get through April with a .500 record, we're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, come on, let's set the bar a little higher than that. Okay, it's one thing to play difficult teams, but come on, now you're hoping for that. Now you're looking at it going, let's go 500.
And they're fortunate the division is not running away from them. Dodgers, Giants are all starting slow, too.
Yeah, listen, the Dodgers are already having players-only meetings. I mean, so no one's running away with anything yet. But that doesn't mean the Dodgers won't. We've seen them do that a couple of times.
Yeah, when they were tied with the D-backs at the break last year and won the division by 16 games.
They'll go 30-4 in a stretch or something like that.
D-backs and Cardinals today. Why does my voice do that? D-backs and Cardinals
puberty,
today.
Man.
Hey!
Hey!
Hey! Be sure to tune in here on Arizona Sports. Coming up next, the NFL draft just days away. And a continuation of the construction project of Monty Ossenford. He's got work to do and can get a lot done. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
The Cardinals have a chance to absolutely reshape the franchise. They have six of the first 90 selections in this year's drafts. And so the Cardinals have a chance, I think, legitimately to add three starters in the first 36 selections that could be day one impact players regardless of position. I certainly think wide receiver needs to be checked off. They need to continue to address the secondary. They need a big boost in the pass rush. And then pretty much anywhere along the offensive line that can find depth, I think, should be in play. But six draft picks in the first 90 for a team that feels like it has its franchise quarterback, that screams the potential for this team to be on the rise in a hurry if this draft goes right.
That is Field Yates from NFL Live on ESPN late last week with the condition right at the very end. If this draft goes right, six of the first 90, great spot for Monty Ossenford to be in. No doubt about it, Bick. But you got to hit on those picks. And certainly the confidence level of Monty Ossenfort hitting on picks is way higher than Cardinals fans were armed with when Steve Keim was the general manager. Even though there's only 1 year of proof, last year was pretty good. Which is
I would agree with that.
An upgrade.
Yes, no, I would agree with that. And I think that's probably on the list of things that Cardinal fans find promising. I think that might be number one on the list.
Absolutely.
Well, it wouldn't be Kyler Murray just yet. He remains somewhat of a divisive figure.
I think very divisive.
Yeah. Even after the way he finished the last eight games last year and the way he came back, which I thought was very strong and impressive. But there's a lot of people who are not in on Kyler Murray. And that's not anecdotal. Well, it is anecdotal. Let's see. He gets introduced to basketball games and the reaction is mixed. You talk to people about him around water cooler. Do people really talk around water coolers anymore? Or is that just a dumb sports cliche that doesn't apply anymore?
Do they even have water coolers anymore? We don't. We have the delicious, clean, clear, crisp, clear, delicious cold water of Connecticut.
Wow.
You are ridiculous.
You bucking for an endorsement?
You want an endorsement,
always,
Jared?
Always and forever.
Yeah.
Nobody has water coolers anymore because everybody's got their Hydro flasks.
Right, there's Stanley cups. Right, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but around proverbial, if there were water coolers, that I would
people
say
people talking about where the water cooler used to be.
Right, exactly. And I think around water coolers, there's a lot of people. I know he's not going to make it. So, if you were going to make a list of what about the Arizona Cardinals makes you the most excited, optimistic, hopeful, I would probably say the potential drafting skill of the general manager, given how bad it was under his predecessor the previous 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what number two would be. Jonathan Gannon and the culture.
I think right now, since we're in draft week, number two is probably just the sheer number of picks they have.
Especially
front-loaded. You heard Field Yates, six of the first 90.
Yeah.
Adam Schefter from ESPN has a piece that was published just this morning, actually about a half an hour ago on ESPN.com, sharing his NFL draft notes and intel, the latest on what he's getting from around the league. The first item on the list, why the Cardinals are in the catbird seat. Arizona GM Monty Ossenfort has advertised with the number four overall pick. His team is open for business, but no sales are expected to be final until the Cardinals are on the clock. Ossenfort has told teams around the league that have inquired about trading up that he wants to wait until he is in position to pick before agreeing to any trade. He continues, a team could always try to outbid the market and lock in the selection now, but it's difficult to give up the haul of compensation it would take without knowing exactly which quarterbacks will be available. And so Austin Ford is sitting, in the eyes of one coach, quote, in the catbird seat. The coach explained he sits at number four and can take all the calls he wants. It's a good spot to be in. And that's been the consensus for months now. That the way this shook out with the available quarterbacks at the top of this draft and the Cardinals sitting at number four, not needing a quarterback, that it's a very envious position for Monty Austin Ford to be in. But
okay.
The thinking might be, Bic, yeah, let the phone ring when you're on the clock at number four, regardless of what happens in front of you. And the thinking might ultimately just boil down to, we've already got six of the first 90 picks. How many more picks do we need? We're confident in our board.
Right.
We feel like we can get six impact players that can really help our roster. Let's just go for it.
If you can't use a number four overall pick in good conscience about in terms of getting yourself an exquisite skill player, because you need every one of those picks and then some to build a competent roster, then you're not spending enough money in free agency. Yeah. If you need that much draft capital for basic maintenance of a roster, you're not spending enough. Then we've got an owner problem.
I agree with that to a degree. They didn't spend a ton, but they spent on a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of different free agents that came in that period. Nobody that's going to move the needle, but also guys that can, especially on the defensive side of the ball with what Monty Austin Ford did, help on that side of the ball with the depth. And they needed it.
Yeah.
Now, going back to the draft and that same discussion, Mina Kimes from ESPN's NFL Live, she is of the belief, like we are, that the Cardinals should stay and draft Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four.
Yeah, I've changed my mind on this question, which I think is a really fascinating one, because as you guys know, I'm usually team trade down. I was in agreement with the Cardinals' decision last year to trade with the Texans, but knowing how that worked out, the Texans being better than anyone could have anticipated and the pick not being as valuable, I still think it was good process. And I don't think it would be bad process for them to trade down given all of the needs on their roster and how deep this receiving class and offensive, well, they don't need offensive tackle, but there's other positions that I think they could address. That said, I think they should just stay and take Marvin Harrison Jr. For a number of reasons.
Yeah, and a lot of people believe that to be the case. Now, Mel Kiper Jr. on NFL Live says, you could still go ahead and trade down, trade out a number four if you're Monty Austin Ford, but you still got to get one of those top receivers.
Feels like not that long ago when Larry Fitzgerald became an Arizona Cardinal with the third pick overall. And now you talk about the fourth pick and Marvin Harrison Jr. I will say this. I'm big in the willing and deal. And I'm like Monty Hall, let's make a deal. Not Monty Austin Ford, Monty Hall, let's make a deal. I always loved it. And I would do it here, but it would only be in one way. One thing would have to happen for me. I got to guarantee I can get one of those three receivers. I cannot lose Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Romo Dunze, because there are three elite receivers in this draft. And there's a lot of good to very good receivers, but only three studs, three great ones.
Yeah, and a lot of people seem to be in that school of thought, too. And an explanation for the younger audience. Monty Hall hosted Let's Make a Deal before Wayne Brady did, way back in the day.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You talk about broadcasting to a very narrow sliver of your audience. Drop a Monty Hall reference.
Yeah, just me and Vince, pretty much.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Certainly you, Jarrett.
Yeah, but I would shudder to think what our conversations are going to be like on Friday morning if the Cardinals do move down. And in my opinion, a nightmare scenario like what Mel Kiper Jr. just described, they don't have one of those top three receivers on Friday morning.
Yeah, listen, another thing I want, when we get back into the Cardinals later, another thing I want to talk about is this belief among some, I saw this in Bleacher Report over the weekend, that the Cardinals might be looking to trade Kyler Murray to a quarterback needy team. Well, wouldn't the Cardinals be a quarterback needy team if you traded Kyler Murray? This idea that the Cardinals are some joke that are not even trying to compete this year, that was last year. And the whole genesis is that this is the year when Kyler Murray's salary cap number becomes an issue. And it's going to be an issue for the next 4 years.
And it's an issue for any quarterback needy team out there that's looking
exactly.
for one of those. And I'll say this in closing. If the Cardinals have any interest at all in trading Kyler Murray, they're really good at poker.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
everything they have said and done has indicated the exact opposite of that. You can text your thoughts.
I love this guy. What are you talking about, me? No, Gambo. We're talking about Kyler Murray.
You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, things did not go the Suns' way. There's an understatement on Saturday. And I've got a harrowing statistic that does not paint a pretty picture. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.